My friends, welcome back to another episode of the Nomad Strength Show. And today we've got a guest that I am extremely excited to talk to, mainly because I've been a follower of his account for a couple of years since it started. And in the last month and a half, 2 months maybe, it's exploded. And it just makes me so happy to see that it's getting the recognition that I think it deserves because of what it is that he does. And the account is Code of the West. And the person behind it is Chris Hunt. And I'm just really pumped to be able to chat with Chris about all of this stuff, with his mission, with what he wanted Code of the West to be, what he envisioned as this mission, and what it's turned into, frankly, in the last couple of months. As of the time of the recording of this episode, he was around 60,000-ish something followers. And as of the time of me recording this intro, a week or two later, it's up to over 75,000. I mean, at the beginning of February, he had like 5,000. So it's really just exploded. And it's awesome because the style with which he creates things is very unique. He's an artist who got his start and has cut his teeth in comic books, and shares some great stories with us about how he really came up in that world and getting to work with just titans in the comic book industry, and how that shifted away from comic books for a long time, got into just regular work, and art was always something that kept poking its head wherever he was. And it's actually a very motivational talk we had today about just following things that you know you're supposed to be doing and doing them really, really well. There's a lot of really good nuggets in here that I think you're going to enjoy. And I actually wanted to start or finish this intro, a little bit differently than I normally would, because one of the things that Chris put up on his Instagram page a few weeks back, it's probably been longer than that now, but it's a video that he put, you know, images and clips to a wonderful piece of audio from Paul Harvey, from a piece that he did from called Freedom to Chains back in 1965. And I just want to play that piece with the music bed that was under that Chris put underneath it. And I would encourage you to go find it. It's his number one pinned post, and look at the visuals that he puts with it. And that in that video in itself will really give you an idea, I think, of what the Code of the West is. And I really think you guys are going to enjoy this. And I hope that you go follow and support what he's doing. He's got amazing art. He has amazing designs that are up on his merch store, where his art is on t-shirts and mugs and all kinds of stuff up there. So go check it out, support what he's doing. And I really think you guys are going to enjoy this episode. So before we hit into the episode, I just want you to listen to this audio.
How come, after thousands of years of experiment, our new nation has come so far so fast? All this in less than 200 years. What is the secret of our success? Well, I think it had to do with a basic American's creed. Perhaps it never passed the pioneer's lips in this form, but if it had, I think he would have said something like this: I believe in my God, in my country, and in myself. I know that sounds like a trite, too simple thing to say, and yet it's a rare man today who will dare to stand up and say, I believe in my God and my country and in myself, and in that order. Well, sir, when that early pioneer turned his eyes toward the West, he didn't demand that somebody else look after him. He didn't demand a free education. He didn't demand a guaranteed rocking chair at eventide. He didn't demand that somebody else take care of him if he got ill or got old. There was an old-fashioned philosophy in those days that a man was supposed to provide for his own and for his own future. He didn't demand a maximum amount of money for a minimum amount of work. Nor did he expect pay for no work at all. Come to think of it, he didn't demand anything. That hard-handed pioneer just looked out there at the rolling plains, stretching away to the tall green mountains, and then lifted his eyes to the blue skies and said, thank you, God. Now I can take it from here.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Nomad Strength Show. Today I am joined by, if you follow on Instagram, the page is Code of the West, and it's extremely popped off in the last handful of weeks, which has been really fun to see, because I think I've probably been following since you had, like, I don't know, 1500 or 2000 followers or so. Yeah. So it's been really cool. But I'm joined by Chris Hunt, the creator of Code of the West, artist. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that we can attach as what you do. You do a lot of stuff, man. I'm pumped to have you on and just chat and see where it goes today, man. Thanks for making time.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Cause I live by myself in Salt Lake. And so as everything has popped off, I've been sort of just, I mean, I do see humans every once in a while, but it's just been mostly me being like, what the hell's going on? Like, what is this? Like, and just sort of like pacing the apartment taxi driver style and just working out and then just being like, what is this? Like, not really having anybody to talk to. So this is kind of nice.
Yeah, dude, I love it. Cause one of the things I think I probably want to start here. I love comic books, and that's where I see the type of art that you do is, and you illustrate for comic books, you write, you've written comic books. Like, why that medium when you were starting, you know, whatever your genesis point of being, I want to draw, I want to be an artist. Like, was it just going flipping through comic books? Like, how did that whole,
basically,
yeah, how did that all start for you? What was the pull to that?
Well, I was, you know, kind of a latchkey kid that hung around adults all the time.
Sure.
And, you know, my parents split sheets when I was about five, and only child at the time. And so, you know, you entertain yourself however you can. And for some reason, I just like drawing from the beginning. It just seemed like I was always a perfectionist. And I remember getting frustrated trying to color in coloring books because I couldn't stay in the lines. And I guess somewhere along the line, I was like, I'll just make my own lines, basically, yeah, you know, in kid logic. And so I was always drawing, and it was like, as a socially awkward kid around other kids, it was a way to sort of have like a bit of currency amongst,
sure,
you know, kids. And so I was just doing that, fiddling around. And then when I was about 10, we moved to Idaho, but I'd go back in the summer times, and my aunt and uncle, they were kind of cool, they were artists, musicians, and back in Ohio. And so they were friends with the guy who was self-publishing comics at that time in Columbus. And for some reason, they just thought that I'd like what he was doing. Hmm. And they gave me his comic, and it's called THB. And they explained it to me. They're like, this is just a dude we know.
Yeah.
Like, he is just, this is his idea. This is his world. And he's just doing this. And in my mind, I'm like, that sounds like an amazing job, you know, mm-hmm, to just have your imagination and just build a world and tell stories. And like in a naive way, I remember being on the floor of my aunt's room reading this comic on like terrible shag green carpet and being like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. Like, this, I'm just going to do this. And then over the ensuing years, you know, the practical reality, you know, this is like late 90s, early 2000s, internet 1.0, basically. Sure. There's no YouTube. There's no way to really research this stuff. So I'm having to go to books, like physical paper books at the library, and you're basically just reverse engineering stuff. And that was interesting to me, but I also got like really into storytelling and video at the time, you know, cause like video was in its nascence as far as digital video goes.
Right, yeah.
And so we were doing stuff in high school where we were shooting like on high eight cameras and doing digital capture into old Macs and learning Premiere and Final Cut Pro. So that was cool. When I was seeing the correlation between, you know, visual storytelling mediums and prose, I was also, man, I'm even weirder than you realize. Like, so at the same time I was doing theater and playwriting.
Yeah.
Like, I almost flunked out of high school for being in a repertory theater company. I was like traveling around.
Okay.
And then I also was in playwriting. And so I'm like writing short videos and stories in high school. We're shooting them. I'm storyboarding them. You know, I'm like 16, yeah, 17. We're doing like car chases with M3s.
Yeah.
In high school, where we're like going 130 miles an hour on like open streets with traffic. It's just nuts. Like, but I was like saying like, oh, if we plan this, I have all these different, you know, they're like, you know, as an autodidact, but like, you know, and they were in their nascence, or I was in my nascence as far as my skill set goes, but I was like, damn, this is cool. Mm-hmm. Like I can do all this stuff and kind of like tell stories. And so even though comics were always at the top of the heap for me, I always saw the correlation between all these different mediums and the ability to tell stories. Sure. So, to try to like condense it down a little bit, I thought I was going to go to art school, got accepted at prestigious art schools and even got some scholarships and like pretty quickly realized I was not going to learn how to make comics and I was going to be really in debt. So it was like no art school. And for some reason I was like, no comics then. Like, I don't know why at that time, you know, I'm thinking like, well, if I can't go to school for it and there's no school that exists for it, then I guess I'm going to do something else. And everybody in my family is all blue collar business owners. So I once again, naively thought, well, I'll go to college and I'll learn business and, you know, I'll learn all the relevant information and I'll off to the races, and showed up in the first day and realized I was retaking like my seventh grade accelerated classes and I was paying for it. And rather than be a smart person and be like, well, I could ace all these, I was like, nope, just played poker and it went to jiu-jitsu and economics for two semesters. And then I flunked out. And so after that, I went and worked for Starbucks, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And because I realized that they had this like really great mentorship program and you could learn. I found like the best manager in the area. And I was like, I'm going to be a store manager. And he's like, okay. And he taught me how to do it. And at like 22, I was running a store that was grossing like $1.3 million a year that I'd opened in this like 40-hour push. It was insane. Wow. I loved it. It was great. But so like in this really early period of my life, I went art, nope, business. Oh, or I actually went art school, nope, business, you know, customer service with Starbucks. And then when I was at Starbucks, so this is like early 2004, 2005. Paul, that guy I mentioned to you, that whose comic I read, he released this awesome Batman book called Batman Year 100. And I basically just like, nope, no comics, not going to think about it anymore. Found this comic and I'd always followed his career. He'd always been developing and growing like in front of you. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you could see him get better. And so I hadn't seen him for a few years and this Batman book comes out. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is amazing. And like, everything I've been pushing down for years, as far as like why I couldn't do it, why I wouldn't want to do it, why I shouldn't do it, just went boop and just like bobbed up. And I couldn't unsee it at that point. And I was kind of pissed to be honest with you. Like, you know, to have like the existential self realization of like, now I know I want this for sure, right. Even after having left it. So now this is a conscious decision on my part, whether or not I do this,
sure.
as opposed to something I had just shoved in the back of my brain. So, Flickr was a thing at this point in time, which used to be, it's still there, but it's like Yahoo's photo sharing website. I mean, cause this is before Facebook even had like photos on it. Like you were just messaging people.
Right.
So Flickr was a way to put pictures up and write things underneath them. Sounds pretty common now, but it wasn't really a thing back then. And so I found Paul on Flickr and was following along. And I was just like, I remember even the feeling right now. It's like this anxiety, like, oh my God, I got to do this. And I was trying to like reverse engineer it without YouTube, without, you know, anything. I'm like, what kind of brushes, what kind of paper? And finally I for years since I was a kid had thought about sending him a letter, like a handwritten letter. I've written handwritten letters numerous times, never sent them. And, I was like, I wonder if he'll just tell me what kind of paper to use.
Yeah.
You know? So I sent him a message on Flickr. I was like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you. Been following you for a long time. I used to know my aunt and uncle. I'm like about ready to like jump into traffic. Just please tell me if you can, what kind of brushes, what kind of paper, what kind of ink, and I will never bother you again. Like 25 minutes later, he responded. He's like, these are your brushes. This is the paper. You know, this is how you clean your brush. Mm-hmm. This is how long you can use it before it gets, you know, you need to get skunked up. Like, and he's like, you're going to hate your first 1,000 ink drawings, heads up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just get after it. And I remember that just clicking in my head being like, oh, I'm a perfectionist. So, you know, I wouldn't start things if I didn't think I could just immediately be good at them. But somehow that my job then became to suck for 1,000. And then it became like a fun game to just start checking them off.
Yeah.
And Paul was following along. I basically just went like 1 of 1,000 and put a picture up, and then what, 2 of 1,000.
Actually counting the 1,000.
Yeah. And so Paul's like, oh, this is actually not that bad. Like, hey, you know, good job. Like, that's better than my second, you know, whatever. And so I was kind of like, it just became addicting at that point. And it became like almost sort of like, didn't almost, it became my life and sort of like my way of structuring how I moved through the world was like failing in front of people, like publicly at something that I loved. And then realizing that I'm basically like, I look at something and go, this is terrible. And people be like, wow, that's really good. And I'm like, okay, so I'm actually not the best measurement of what is good or bad. Sure. So I should just keep going and just keep doing things. And, yeah, so without going into like an hour of comics, I just didn't stop. And then I ended up becoming friends with Paul, and he ended up becoming my mentor. I ended up moving to New York for a few years. I was his assistant.
Oh, that's cool.
It's super cool. I mean, there's like a whole, like, this is a whole weird backstory, origin story.
So where was he in the midst of the comic book world? Cause I wasn't super embedded I wasn't super embedded into it where I would know, you know, more than maybe a couple of different of the artists like that did some of the big ones, but like in terms of a lot of the stuff, where was he and like, what was the main things he did were some big ones? You mentioned a Batman one, but like what other kind of things did he do?
Yeah. Batman was big. He's one of the, like in the pantheon of Batman artists now.
Yeah.
And then he, when I moved to New York, he was working on his first big intellectual property for a big publisher, because he owned and did his own thing with that first comic that I read. He also worked in Japan in the late 90s for Kodansha. Mm-hmm. So he, which is still not really common, to be honest with you. They don't let American artists kind of come over there and try to be mangaka. And I don't really talk about this that often. Because it feels kind of weird to say it, but I think it's pertinent here. I'm kind of like a part of this old lineage of comics, almost like what it was like to be a Mason.
Sure.
You know, I'm like as in like a Mason, like an actual Mason.
Sure.
Work with stone.
Yep.
Like you learn from somebody, you pass the knowledge on.
Apprenticeship style.
So, yeah, yeah. And so there's like people who I was inspired by that were inspired by Paul. Then there's people who like taught Paul. And worked with Paul, especially on that Batman book. So this is crazy, but like when I lived in New York, Sin City 2 came out, the movie, and Paul got invited with a bunch of DC people to go to this private screening at the Bowery Hotel. And he's like, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah. And so if you're a comic book nerd, like if you like DC, if the room had blown up, basically like North American Comics would have been donezo.
Yeah.
Who was there. And I like was sitting next to Chip Kidd, who is this amazing graphic designer. He's the guy who designed the Jurassic Park logo. If that's any indicator. I don't really know who Chip Kidd is at this point. Yeah. He's just a nice guy that I'm talking to sitting there. We watched the movie, Josh Brolin comes out, and I'm like, this is cool. And then after the movie, there's this like kind of, not really a party, but like a gathering downstairs.
Yeah.
And Frank Miller, who's the creator of Sin City, is sitting in this high back chair. And Paul's like, hey, like follow me. And takes me over to Frank. So Frank was one of Paul's mentors. So like, I don't even know if Frank would remember this, to be honest with you. Like, but like, Paul takes me in front of Frank Miller, introduces me, and says, he's the next one. Like he's the one I'm giving the fire to. Like,
wow.
And it was just like, like for, it's just a moment in my journey. Cause Frank Miller just kind of like, okay. but
that's awesome.
But to have like, to be the little kid though, that was like sitting on the floor reading the comic from the guy he's never met, to then being with that guy and then being in this, I mean, it's a hero's journey to me. I'm not saying I'm a hero or heroic figure, but it's like, it's that journey. It's like archetypal. And, it like, even though like that moment didn't change my life on a mechanical level, mm-hmm. it reinforced what I was doing was the right path, you know, if that makes sense. It just, what sucked is in like, I realized my path kind of needed to diverge from comics directly at a certain point.
Interesting. Yeah, dude, Frank Miller, he's absolutely one of my favorites. Like, I think he's
giving me anxiety right now, even like remembering it. Cause it's just like, cause I don't really get starstruck and I don't have, like, I don't look at people that way typically. Sure. Like, you know, and even then it's like, Frank's a human.
Yeah.
But it was like the circumstances and why and how. It's just, it's like, I've been pretty fortunate just by following my gut and trying to be like as true to that intention as possible. Yeah. Like, it definitely looks weird to people at times because people think I should be going right when I'm going left. Sure. But it's because I've gone left 2-3 years down the road that something like that happens.
Yeah. The, I remember, and it's because of the age. So I'm almost 32. So,
okay. I'm a little older than you.
So where I fall in a lot of this stuff, like a lot of his comics, like the Dark Knight Returns, I was too young to read, but that was the first of the animated movies that I remember seeing of Batman, where the part Richard one and part
Weller
two.
Yes. The voice of Batman. Yes. RoboCop.
Yes, exactly. And so, I mean, that was like my first introduction to him. And then like you go on the whole, I mean, and for me, Batman was like the one where that's how I got into all of it, because I loved all of like Brian Bolland when did Killing Joke and like all of those different ones. I like, that was where I learned a lot of those guys and then really got into the art piece. And that's like, even today I have friends that kind of tease me about it, but the animated movies that they've made that were basically just the straight up adaptations from a lot of these comics are like, they're better than most of the live action movies that have been made in the last 20 years, as far as the storytelling.
Done really well. Yeah. Like the live action stuff kind of struggled to find its sea legs, but the narrative animation stuff is they killed it. That.
Yeah. Really, really well done stuff. So it's really cool. That's such a cool story. So from that moment, when you have this realization or this like, okay, damn, like, I'm here now. I'm doing this, and it's been.
I lost you there a little bit. I don't know if you can hear me. Oh. Might need to catch up here for a second. Oh, there you are. You're back.
Yeah.
So, the realization.
Yeah. So you have that moment, you know, sitting in front of him, and you get this praise, and you're like, okay, damn, this is like what I'm doing now, right? So So from that moment, how did you come into like this style of what you know, eventually became Code of the West? But like, what's that gap to where now it's like you're creating your own stuff? And it's like, how did you kind of find your footing with what you liked to create? And then, you know, that kind of turned itself into what you're doing now. So like, what was that little journey and gap like there?
Well, at the time when I went to that thing with Paul, since the Sin City thing, I was working on Carver, which was my graphic novel. And that was the first time I was like, I'm going to sing my song, you know? And that was also kind of like a, man, I'm doing this totally wrong. Like, cause at that time comics were already becoming like a, you try to pitch a comic that you thought could be a TV show or a movie.
Sure.
And if you know anything about TV shows and movies, you don't pitch black and white. You don't pitch, a period piece. Mm. And I was black and white 1920s,
okay.
in action adventure, which is not really a thing, even now, still is kind of struggling to kind of come back around, even though I think plenty of people still love those types of stories.
Yeah.
And that was my methodology, where it's like, man, I want to see these stories. No one's doing them. I'm going to do it, which is going to come back to play in Code of the West here in a second.
Yeah.
So I go ahead and do it and work on it. And Frank and Paul both kind of had this sort of like, they were still doing those kinds of stories to some extent.
Sure.
Like, but you know, they're at the top, they can basically walk into any of these places and go like, I'm going to draw a picture story about a rabbit and he's going to have saws on his paws or something. And they're like, okay, cool, sweet. Man. Like,
do what you want. For it.
Yeah. And so I got through Carver. It didn't shit the bed, but it also didn't like change my life or my career,
sure.
Even though like it won, you know, IGN graphic novel of the year. And I was like, that's cool. But like, no one's calling.
Yeah.
And so part of it was just survival. Like, you know, after Carver came out, I was like, I got to work. I got to figure out how to make money. And people were coming up to me, people who were like really high up in the industry going, this is great. This is amazing. You did something really awesome. You should be proud of. And then like people who were on the same level as me or like the same, who were peers that could give me jobs that were editors or working at publishers, just crickets. Mm. So it was this really weird dichotomy or cognitive dissonance rather, where I'm like, okay, I believe what people are saying that they like this, but I would think that if people like it, it would lead to me being able to get work, and it wasn't happening. And I was kind of just taking these like really not good jobs just to pay the bills. And I was like, this is miserable. This is the opposite of why I started doing this. You know, this is my dream. Why am I doing it this way? And, so initially I just left comics just straight up. I was like, I'm done. I'm just going to go find a job. And I ended up working at, I was an assistant store manager at a Filson store that was opening up in Ohio. Cause I'd gone back to Ohio to help my grandparents out. And since I was location agnostic, and, I was like, Filson is my happy place. I'd worked there when I was in New York, had a lot of friends, met again, a left turn that people thought was not right. Because I went to New York to make comics, and then they're like, you're working at a Filson store? I'm like, this is great. I was in the Wenatchees in a trail maintenance crew like 3 weeks before I went to New York. I went to New York with the same Osprey pack on my back that I carried through the mountains. Yeah. So like to be able to have like a little bit of home in New York City, work part-time, this is great. Yeah. This also comes into play later with Code of the West. Me choosing to do that thing, even though people were criticizing it. Do Carver, go to Ohio, work at Filson again. And I'm good at managing. Yeah. I'm really good at selling stuff. And I love Filson, and I was mentoring, and the guy who was the store manager kind of checked out and ended up getting fired. And I had to go to Seattle where Filson is headquartered for like a store manager meeting, even though I wasn't a store manager. And I was like, this is cool. I get to go to Mecca. I get a free ride to Seattle, whatever. And I'm like the second day I'm up looking at product with all the store managers, and I'm just sketching. I even though I'm not drawing comics anymore, I can't help it. Yeah. And I'm just drawing things that are in front of me, and I feel like a tap on the back of my shoulder, and I turn around, and it's this middle-aged woman who's very nice and French, and it's like, oh, you can draw. And it's like, oh yeah, no, I can draw. And she's like, well, you know, basically like, you know, why do you draw? Mm. I'm like, oh, I used to make comics, you know, like, and she's like, really? I was like, yeah, they're kind of like European comics. But she's like, really? What kind of European comics? I was like, do you know European comics? And she's like, well, French. I'm like, Corto Maltese. And she's like, you know Corto Maltese? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, you know who else likes Corto Maltese? Is Alex. And I'm like, who's Alex? And she's like, Alex is the chief creative director of Filson. And I'm like, okay.
No kidding.
Fast forward, I ended up like eventually having to leave the store, and I was just a creative consultant for Filson after this conversation. Mm-hmm. Like basically just the New York moment, the I'm done with comics moment, and the like I'm just gonna sketch moment led to basically the path that led to Black Rifle, and that the path that led to Code of the West. Yep. I always liked these ideas, the Jack London, the Hemingway, mm-hmm. the Louis L'Amour, you know, but I was trying to have a career, and I thought like in, you know, I was, everybody's drawing fucking Batman or like, here's my new high concept. It's robots and zombies or in romance with each other. Like, you know, make my TV show.
Right.
And I was trying not to do that strictly, but, and that was why Carver was kind of like one for me, one for them kind of thing. But once I had let go of like having a career in comics and trying to make that a sustainable thing, I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to do what I want to do now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, when Black Rifle showed up, I was doing Filson stuff, and Evan was like, you know, rescued me like a sort of a lost cat. And that, like, I'd always, when I was at Filson, I saw like the potential of storytelling. Basically, branding is storytelling. Yes. It's just like, they're not, they don't talk about it the right way. And it's like half of the equation. They're, you know, especially like with marketing and all these things where it's like, let's show cool guys doing cool stuff. And it's like, cool. Mm-hmm. Is that a story though? Like, you know, that's just activity. Those are just things that are happening that are well shot and cool. You're going for a vibe. Maybe you're going for a narrative, but for the most part, you're just stringing shit together. And in my head, I'm going like, man, if you could like just tell a story, like, you know, like Filson at the time was like 130 years old. You had Levi's. It was almost equivalently as old. Like they had stories by accident, just for the sheer length of time that they'd been around. There were people who had interacted with it that had led to this legend. In my mind, I'm like, well, if you're new, if you're 10 years old, 5 years old, 10 days old as a company, you can't afford to wait 130 years to figure out what your story is. You'd have to just curate the story, build the story from the ground up. And so I was playing around with that at Filson, you know, and the role that I had, which is pretty wide open, honestly. I mean, I basically just created a job for myself, did a comic, did some other stuff, did some product. I don't think that ever got out to the world, but I got paid. And then the Black Rifle stuff was kind of that times like cranked up to 11, you know, because Evan was basically like, we need to rebrand the coffee bags. We're going to go public in a year and a half. I was like one of a half dozen people that knew about that outside of like the board or the VC company.
Yeah.
And I had to get people to do it with me. And then the idea was that like, we tell stories with the bags. Like the value proposition is it's a $15 disposable thing that you'd feel bad about throwing away and take and put story and art on that. Yeah. Basically, like if you go into Toys R Us back in the day and go and looking at the G.I. Joe packaging and the Masters of the Universe, we're like, damn, I don't know what's in the box, but the art's cool.
Don't you feel bad about throwing the box away?
Sure, yeah. Exactly. And that was the logic.
Yeah.
And so, over time, I'm going, God damn, everything's a story. Everything's a story. And, you know, like identity and social groups, but it's like people stumbled on it. They don't. Like Black Rifle is a great example of like, I think, you know, there was all this intention behind what it was and what it served and who it was serving. But like, I don't think Matt and Evan and JT and Logan like sat down and, well, I can tell you they didn't sit down and read a Bible out. Like it was just this intuition, this gut thing. And I'm like, man, if you could like, I mean, like I think about Walt Disney a lot. Yeah. And the Disney company and like, it's different now, obviously, than it was, you know, way different.
Yeah.
But back before the dark times, before the emperor,
right.
Walt was like the center of everything.
Yes.
And like the figurehead and when he died, because no one had prepared for that eventuality, the company just went and just like imploded for like 10, 15 years. Yep. Like the animation went out the door. No one really knew what the arbiter of what was Disney, because that had been Walt. And so in my head, like I'm thinking like in terms of all this stuff, it's like, it's not enough to just create the story. You've got to also sort of like say like, what is the story? I have to be able to hand it to somebody. Yeah. Much like when I was pitching a comic book, you can't just be like, you don't go into an office at a publisher and go like, Hey man, I've got this idea for like Hemingway meets Indiana Jones and it's going to be dope. Like, and that's not going to get you a book.
Okay.
Like, yeah. You got to like, there's a method to the madness. It's almost like an operational order,
yeah.
You know, in the military speak, like where it's like your one sentence statement, here's how we're going to do it. Here it is broken down in this sort of microcosm of like step one through five or whatever. And so all of this, I'm like, it's just compounding interest or, you know, like, or like an exponential curve where like the through line has always been comics and storytelling. And then I'm realizing like, Jesus, like I'm just living, we're all living inside of these different stories. Two things here. One is that like, that's so much potential. That's so crazy and cool to think of it in those ways. Second thing is we don't know that we're living inside of a story, which means we're susceptible to manipulation. This is like psychological blind spots, like archetypes, union concepts, it's magic tricks. And if you don't, like, magic is ethical if everybody understands it's a trick.
Right.
It's not ethical if you're using magic trick techniques to, subvert, steal, you know, an ulterior motive, basically. You got to be on equal footing with everybody. So yeah, this is kind of like what led to Code of the West, of being like, okay, I know what I like drawing. I know the stories I like to tell. I know the ideals and the ideas and I'm seeing the world run like a chicken with its head cut off, not knowing that it's being spun up by story, and not knowing that story could also help maybe be a fire extinguisher on things. So that's kind of what got me to this point, you know, with Code of the West and why I started. Now, it took me like 2 years to figure out how to like actually tell the story that I wanted to tell. But again, that's the 1008 drawings. You know, you just got to fail.
And the thing that I think you may have said it in a comment in response to somebody on that video that I had told you, like I reshared it the other day on that Paul Harvey video, which is, I seriously, in the last like 3 days, I've probably watched it 30 times.
Like, well, and something's happening with that, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, honestly,
probably like, all me, dude. I've just watched it that many times in the last few days.
I mean, I appreciate you for it because the algorithm is looking at it and going like, this is something, because it went from like, this will be pertinent at some point, probably to the what the fuck happened. But like, I pinned that and it went from like 10,000 to 30,000. Yesterday it was at 80,000 before Instagram stopped working for me like 3 hours ago. It was at like 150,000.
That's awesome. Views.
So like something's happening. But anyways, comment on that video.
Yeah. So somebody had talked about Paul Harvey in a comment and said like, you know, because he had so many of these great, you know, readings and things that he used to do talking about really the spirit, right? Mm-hmm. The spirit of the West and just America in general. Like I think most people who are familiar with Paul Harvey probably have heard, So God Made a Farmer, you know, like there's, mm-hmm. which is another one, like that's the world I'm from, man. Like my dad and half of the people I know and grew up with, that's where I'm from. So it's like, I have a real strong connection to him specifically. Because of all that, and like I remember my grandpa telling me about him when I was little and playing like some of these things for me. Once he found out that he could find him on the computer, you know, like and I remember thinking that my grandpa was like one of the most techie people I'd ever met in my life because he was able to like search stuff, and I'm like, this is awesome, and he would play these things for me, right? And so, like, I think that's where a lot of it connected for me. But there was you had said something about like the purpose of this is to sort of tell those same, like have those same types of themes of what the Code of the West is doing in akin to what Paul Harvey was doing, you know, those decades ago, to try to capture, like you said, we've been talking about stories, like these stories and this, and really this spirit is like the word I like to use for it, because, you know, we've all, spirit of the West is like not an uncommon phrase.
Yeah. Right? It sounds better than vibe too.
Vibe.
It's a vibe.
They're very conjoined together, and that's in very similar in that way, where the ability of someone to tell a story that can encapsulate a movement like that, I think, is extremely powerful. And there's all of these throughout American history specifically, because I've got a ton of friends from the South, like tons of friends down in the South that I've met through like all the Soranek stuff these last few years. Mm-hmm. You know, guys, you know, obviously guys like Brandon and all these other guys that are down there that are heavy steeped in like the Appalachian culture of stuff. Like, and it's interesting to me. You have like the Northeastern, the revolutionary culture around stuff, and all of these things still linger in these places. You know what I mean? And
it's in the zeitgeist.
Exactly. And so like you go down into the places in the South and you can see like this stuff, like the way that these people talk, the way this has been around for 200 years. You know, you go up to, you go visit places like Boston and all these other areas and in New England, and you're like, I can see how these things have lingered since the time of revolution and all this kind of thing. And then you like get to the West, and I know it's just because this is where I'm from. Like, I'm Idaho boy. So there's like, it just speaks to me more seeing the imagery first. Like you see cowboys riding in the middle of a sagebrush desert that you can see for 15 miles or more. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, that's exactly where I grew up. So it's like, I am a desert kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like, there's part of that I think is a really cool thing to have something or someone that speaks for that segment and encapsulates that really, which is obviously why I'm so drawn to it. But then you bring in like the stuff where you're doing comic book style stuff, I'm like, there's another inroad for me to be a part of. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that was the riddle for me is like, I was overthinking all that because I was like, well, I'm not a cowboy. I was raised by cowboys. Yeah. All the things that you're saying, I love about the West. And, you know, but I'm also this nerd and I'm a storyteller but I'm a nerd storyteller that like has like been punched in the face and knows how to punch back, you know, literally. Yep. And so when I was rereading Louis L'Amour's Education of a Wandering Man, I was like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's been around these things. Yes. He's done a lot of things, but like what his benefit to the West was his ability to talk about the West. It'd be like saying like, you know, the qualifier for writing Tombstone would be that you had to have like been in a shootout at, the OK Corral. Right. Like, no, like you just have to, but you have to, as a storyteller, you have to understand why and how you're telling the story. And I think that when I realized like, oh, I don't have to worry about like being the dude or being a dude. This is not about me.
Right.
Like I'm going to be coming in and out, flittering in and out, but like it, you know, it's not the Chris Hunt code of the West. It's like the code of the West. I just, in theory, like it should be able to like be something that like I pass over to someone, you know, like it's through my lens. It's through the choices that I'm making, you know, right now. But, and that was the interesting thing about Harvey then too. Cause like when I made that video, it was like, I was getting some traction early in February, you know, so like last month, but I was like starting to be like, man, I just got to say what I'm feeling, you know, as opposed to like trying to like, I don't know what I was doing, to be honest with you. I was just trying different things, not to like get following, but to be like, how do I use Instagram?
Right.
Like basically, cause, you know, I worked with AMC at one point on a TV show. I did a comic that was tethered to a show called Turn, which was about Washington spies.
I remember that show.
It's cool. I love it. Love the book too. But the woman who I was working with who wrote the script for the comic had never written a comic book before. She had written a script for TV show, obviously. Sure. And it was a real challenge because she understood story, but she didn't understand the mechanism of the medium that she was working in. And I had this moment where I'm like, oh, Instagram's just a medium. It's actually not this thing to like be like, oh, the algorithm. It's like, dude, the algorithm is designed to keep you on the platform.
Right.
So like if you want to be an asshole, it's probably going to be like, well, assholes only attract other assholes. So like that's not like a wide net. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know there's like shadow banning and like censoring and all that stuff. I'm not saying it isn't. It's just that like, the default of like, well, my content's not being seen because the algorithm, boom. It's like, or your algorithm or your content. So that's possible too.
Which is more likely the case with most, most accounts.
Yeah. And so, you know, that Paul Harvey thing was the first time that I went, man, this sounds like what I'm trying to say. Yeah. If I could marry it with like what I've seen and done, this could be kind of like a sort of a flag in the sand or like something that I could kind of stand with where I'm like, I don't really know how to put it succinctly. Watch this for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, like here's the spirit, like you said. And I was also the first time where I'm like, oh, Instagram is, you know, if it's hard for someone who writes for television to understand how like visually words and imagery have to be married together, well, then of course it's going to be difficult for Instagram, for us to learn Instagram, because it's sound, it's motion, it's words when you can and should use it. But it's like different planes of that. Like there's words within potentially the thing that you're creating. There's words around it in the caption. And I was just like, how do I maximize this as a medium, not so much as a riddle that I need to solve. And that was when I was like, that was when everything kind of popped off, to be honest with you. When I approached it as if it was just, you know, like I'm going to start writing a novel as opposed to a screenplay.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
That's really interesting way to think about it too, because it is its own, like, I mean, it, we say that, and of course it's its own medium. There's its own rules for it.
It seems,
like,
super obvious when you say that.
Wow. Like, there's, it's, it has its own rules in order for it to work maximum effective. Right. And so once you learn, like, what those are, it's not the same thing as throwing something up on Twitter or any of these other platforms or mediums. Like, but I think as I'm saying it, and as I'm hearing you say it, it probably does lend itself more to a comic style of visual art, right? Because of the nature of what it is. Like, so in these ones where you've been doing these, like these Louis L'Amour quotes, and then have the Hawk and Horse song in the back, which I love, that reminds me of reading a comic. And I'm like, well, duh, this makes sense.
When I always wanted to, like, I have a score for Carver. Yeah. Like, there is music that I made for that book. I didn't make it. I worked with somebody. Because I was always like, God, you know, I remember, like, I'm old, but, like, there used to be these books where you get, like, a 45, and there'd be this, like, little, like, plastic record player, and you could, like, it basically, like, turn the page, and, like, they would have, like, a little bit of music playing, and they have, like, a little bit of something to augment it. And I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could kind of set the stage a little bit with a comic, and you could, like, basically say, here's a playlist, or here's X, Y, and Z. And then it's like, oh, now we have digital comics. And even then, what was funny is that no one ever leaned into what digital could do with a comic. Like, they basically were like, let's just do the digital version of the analog experience, which is, like, here are pages, you turn them. Whereas, and this is going back to, like, when I was doing comics in the early teens, where I'm like, shit, if you've got a different set of technology and a different medium, you should learn or experiment with that potential then. You know, like, what could you do with, you know, obviously you can't have, like, a paper comic and turn the page and it's like, like, you know, but you could definitely figure out how to do that with a digital comic.
Yeah.
And so that's what I, to your point, like, that's what I saw Instagram as, suddenly was like, oh shit. Like, This like, it went from being like, how do I figure this out, to being like, oh my God, I could do so many things with this. Like, you know, and I think perception is a huge part of moving through life anyways, of just, you know, viewing something as a challenge versus something as, like, an impossible, you know, unattainable thing. Like, it's like, if it's like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'll try to figure it out. Yeah. Like, you will typically figure it out. And so, like, I think also we're mired in social media 1.0 and then, like, this sort of 1.5, like, 1.0 would be the, like, the people who have accounts that are 300,000 followers and they just look at people.
Yeah.
Like, meaning that, like, it's just like, hey, good morning, here's a photo in the mirror. And it's like, again, when you say these things out loud, it's like their account is basically 300,000 people looking at them.
Yeah.
You know, which is bizarre to think about. Then you got 1.5, I think, which is, you know, brands who started realizing, like Black Rifle, I think, where it's like, hey, look, we're out doing stuff. We're doing cool stuff. We're putting a Gatling gun on a Prius. We're, you know, we got Winter Strong, you know, and this is not a knock on anybody, by the way. This is just, like, the evolution that we've been watching. And I think that, again, the 1.5 aspect is, it's like people intuitively are like, oh, we need to, like, do more. Like, we need to, like, we can't, it's not enough to just be like, hey, look, here's a t-shirt. I mean, because I think really what people were treating Instagram like was like a shop window where you just slap some shit up there, like the community bulletin board, and people walk by and go like, oh, that's cool. And then they keep going. Yep. And then basically, like, everybody's running down the street metaphorically, be like, no, come back. I'll give you like $5 if you hang out for a little bit and just, like, you know, interact for a second. When really what we should be doing is putting something in the window that stops people and makes them want to come inside. And I think intuitively that was the intention, but, you know, I feel like we're still stuck in this phase where it's just like, it's a look at me thing as opposed to like, come in here with me.
Right.
You know, like that's the difference. And I think, well, I don't think that was my intention behind Code of the West. It took me a while to figure out how to say it. And I think that's part, again, I say, I think, cause I don't really know what the fuck happened. Yeah. This has just all been an experiment.
Been a wild month.
I think people were like, okay. Like, you know, like it was just like, all right, yeah, I'll come in. I'll check it out. Like, you know, it as opposed to, like, you know, do you ever go to, like, trade shows or anything? Like,
every once in a while. Yeah. Every once in a while.
Like, you know, there you go and there's just people sitting at booths and at tables and they're just kind of.
Yep.
And they're waiting for someone to come over and be like, hello, I'm interested in your wares.
Yeah.
I get why you don't want to be pushy. You don't want to be like the carny barker. But when I would see people at Comic-Cons that were successful, it was this sort of middle road where it wouldn't be this sort of like, here's the world's biggest ball of yarn. It wasn't like that obvious, but there'd be something about like inherently woven into the booth or the idea or the person where you're like, oh, that's interesting. And you'd go over mm-hmm. there. On the flip side, most of the time, no one does that because if you're famous, your ball of yarn is that you're famous.
Right.
Like people just want to come see the giant ball of yarn, which is Frank Miller, or, you know, get an autograph from somebody who's in your favorite TV show. Right. So the real challenge, I think, is know the story, know the narrative, and then endeavor to build a community as opposed to try to get a following. And that's been the really interesting thing about what's happened is everybody reaching out and being like, what'd you do? Like, what happened? And it's like, well, it seems like everybody's strategy is just to go find bigger accounts to post your stuff
right.
and then hope that you have this attrition of that audience. The problem is that if you are staying in the same orbit of something, at some point you're going to reach this sort of like maximum capacity or threshold, I think, where it's like, okay, we know everybody in the Black Rifle community. We know everybody in the Sornex community. We know everybody in the, I don't know, like the Office Depot community, yeah. you know, like whatever it is yeah. you're trying to build. Like you, at some point after years of targeted ads and doing this sort of like overlapping, like collab cross branding thing, which I don't think is bad, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't think it's the only thing you can do. And it seems like that's what everybody's been trying to do. And I didn't want to do that with Code of the West. I wanted the audience to show up when they did show up to be there for Code of the West, not because somebody that was cooler than me, quote unquote, was like, man, you shouldn't really like check out Code of the West.
Right.
Like, which it's not bad if it does happen, but it's again, it's not the complete strategy. Sure. I don't think it's a tactic.
So let's look at, I mean, I know all of this is happening at such a rate where it kind mm-hmm. of took you by surprise. You've said before. Yeah. And so, I am curious, like you've done a couple of posts the last couple of days about things that you have ideas for that you want to do with it and make it about. Mm-hmm. And part of those things that I've loved, like you're sharing these quotes and these things that are trying to help push people to a lot of these older, either writers or other artists or these things that are in this same theme, right? Like you've done Louis L'Amour, mm-hmm. like you've done all these things. And again, that's another one. Like I grew up watching John Wayne with my dad. Right. Like this whole thing, like I've said, in many ways, mm-hmm. I'm the target demo for this in a lot of ways.
You and me both, man. You and me both.
And so looking ahead, like what are, you know, a few of these things that you have these ideas that you want to do with this, even if the blown up part of this didn't necessarily happen. I know that there's parts in your brain that you're like, I have this idea for what I want this to be. Like, what does that kind of stuff look like?
Well, I mean, like there's a lot of things that have occurred in the past year. And I mean, this isn't just because of your podcast, but like one of the things that happened was I got healthy and, you know, I just sort of put it off for years, never prioritized it. And after I left Black Rifle, my stepdad, I was up in Northern Idaho and he'd come up with me to, Josh's opening in Frenchtown of the new facility. Yep. And, I just decided to go home for a little bit after that. And he was going to have to go on like heart shit medicine, you know, for blood pressure and all this stuff if he didn't lose weight. And so his doctor was like, you know, if you don't want to do that, you're going to have to try to, or if you don't want to go on the pills, rather, you're going to have to try to right. get healthy. And out of solidarity, I was like, well, I'll do it with you. You know, like, you know, at first it was more just like change what we were eating. And the next thing he said, well, we got to cut out cheese. And I was like, you motherfucker.
sorry, say what?
Like, I was pissed. But the reason I say this, though, is that, like, I would love to know the science behind this. Because I know that there's all sorts of catechisms on the internet, especially social media, about, like, you know, like the Bedros kind of stuff. And like, the guys who are like, you know, you get your body right, you get your mind right kind of thing. Sure. Like, and I get it. But I wonder if there's, like, an actual scientific correlation between like valuing and being mindful of like the intention that is required, intention and attention that is required to be deliberate in what you eat, what you do, how you move through that. Because I do think that there is a combination of like me feeling better about myself, me physically, literally feeling better. And then, you know, people like a winner, I guess, to put it simply, sure. You know, like, you know, it's a little bit easier to be the face of something if you're not Jabba the Hutt, though it's not required. You know, Jelly Roll is a good example of that. in all honesty, yeah. It's like, you don't have to look like a certain thing to really to get at home. So the reason why I bring all this up is that I took that time and really didn't do anything with Code of the West. Like I was focusing on like this, representing the code, doing uncomfortable things, getting better tomorrow, you know, doing all the things that I believed and had been trying to say, but had to take the uncomfortable look at myself and realize like, I ain't doing everything, yeah. You know, like that I could. So with how that relates to what I want to do with Code of West in the future is I want it to not just be this portal that we look through on Instagram. Like, you know, we can interact and, you know, that's cool, but I want it to bleed out into the real world in some way. And that's what I hope when I'm saying, like, you know, like take what we're talking about in the caption or the quote, go hold a door for somebody, wink, you know, mm-hmm. like say hi, tell the little kid, tell the little boy or the girl who opens the door for somebody, like, good job, like reinforce that shit. And so I don't know, like, and like, I'm not trying to do like the lion's not sheep sort of community, nor am I trying to do like, you know, Winter Strong. I don't have the resources or the ability or the knowledge to do those things. It's more like I want to try to like bring back this idea of community involvement. Like I was thinking about last night, like I'm not really super churchy, haven't been for a long time, but I was like, does anybody go to church on Sunday anymore? You know, like, cause I realized, I'm like, man, everybody I knew, like Sunday morning, basically whatever town you were in shut mm-hmm. down because everybody either went to the Methodist church or everybody went to the Catholic mm-hmm. church or synagogue or whatever it was. And that was like this moment where you could kind of like meet your neighbors, hang out, have some crappy cookies in the basement, drink some juice, talk about what's going on, talk about Susan who doesn't mow the lawn on the corner of Bishop Drive and State Street or whatever, you know, like, and I'm like, man, that, if I'm accurate, I know people still do go to church, but I don't feel like it is as ubiquitous as it once was. And I'm like, man, if I could, and I'm not trying to start a religion either, just to be clear, but that, I would love Code of the West to be that kind of thing to some degree where it's like, you know, but on this sort of like national and almost international scale of like, this is the place that we get together and we don't sit around in kvetch. We get around and talk about like, how do we do something better? How do we mentor kids in the community? How do we get people on horses? How yeah. do we, you know, any number of things like, you know, I mean, it's, even though it's an experiment in storytelling, like we've been talking about, like it's an experiment in storytelling in an effort to get to this point that I'm talking about mm-hmm. right now of like, this is real in my mind. Like, and I'm getting messages from people from all over the world. People are basically asking if, as if I'm the arbiter of what is Western, which is silly. But like, is, I know, I hope it's okay. I'm from New Zealand, but I really believe in this. It's like, yeah. right. Like, so, you know, there's little silly things I've talked about, like doing pen pals or whatever. Some people were, after they listened to the podcast I put up yesterday, were like, maybe you could do a business directory. You know, of people who were like, you know, I don't know. I mean, farriers, sure. jewelry makers, whatever, yeah. you know, like I'd have to find a way to like make that sustainable. And like, I've been trying to do this basically without charging money for it. You know, like the gears in the background of everything, like if you want to have a shirt or a hat and kind of represent it, cool, it's there. But that's not I'm not optimizing to sell t-shirts. Sure. I'm optimizing to try to save the soul of America. Yeah. And so, I think the way you do it is everybody kind of holds down their corner of things.
I like that a lot. And that tie, I mean, I was going to, cause I was looking at the actual code post that you did with,
You there again for a second and probably come back here.
Oh, there we are. Got you back.
There you are. There you're back. You're back.
I was looking at the post that you did where you actually had the 10 point. You know, the code of the West, which I love because again, it's things like what you said, at a time probably were just the standard. You know, like it wasn't something that needed written down because it was just taught and understood and people got it, you know. But I think that's one of the things that there's a lot of that has been lost, and having a visual thing.
Come on back. Come on back.
Am I back?
There you are.
I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on. I think it's my internet too, all of a sudden. but having, after these things disappearing for, you know, or fading over the last few decades, there are people that aren't even tied to what was the standard of ethics, you could say, for, you know, for the majority of the country's history, at least. And so having like the actual visual bullet points, you know, even as just a starting point or a reference point for somebody, it's like, oh, me and you look at this and we're like, well, you know, but it's like somebody else is like, wow, this is actually, this is actually really helpful. Like I'm actually gleaning something from this, which I think is the really cool potential for it. So there's a lot of things that I think have the potential to tie people who otherwise have no dog in the West fight or have no like experience with it. Where like you said, it doesn't have to be for somebody who's literally like me from the middle of the West that was embedded in a lot of this stuff my whole life. It doesn't have to be just for that person, but it's more like the idea.
And I think that's the mistake that a lot of these Western brands make is that, you know, because they're like, it's kind of like a different version of like the tactical shadow ban conversation that constantly happens, where like the Western conversation tends to be like, well, I guess it's okay that Beyonce made a song, and you know, I guess it's okay that Yellowstone's a thing. And it's like, well, okay, either you don't care or you care, like, but don't be in this like middle ground, lukewarm thing. It's like, and it seems to be more of like, you know, let's talk about who really can be a cowboy or who can't be a cowboy. That's not what Code of the West is about. Code of the West is about the, like, basically it's about who would be in the West, you know? And actually Evan and I talked about this at one point, when I was going to roll it into Black Rifle, like the story of the West is a story of like, it's an international story. It's like at this point in time, in this sort of deconstructionist postmodern place that we're looking at it from, it's just cowboys and it's just white American cowboy guys. Like if you were living in it, it was like vaqueros. It's obviously the indigenous people. It's people who are coming from Scandinavia and like getting on a wagon train and getting their asses shot off like by robbers, you know, like it's like, it was this story that brought people to America, you know, this idea of freedom and the ability to reshape yourself and make your own destiny. Like that, it was like, it became this, the myth of America, you know, and so it's not so much like, you know, just like, I want John Wayne's estate to make more money. I'm not against it, but it's like John Wayne, and actually what's interesting, even in one of his biographies, his real name's not John Wayne. I don't know if you knew that. But he describes it as like, he is a guy that plays John Wayne, who is John Wayne in a movie. And that's that, I've thought about that for years, where I'm like, that's why there was so much consistency in those movies, I think. And in his movies is that like, he's playing an archetype. Yeah. He's aware that John Wayne is an archetype. And I think that that's really where it, when people ask like what happened, it's like, it's actually really simple. I just figured out how to tell the story. The complexity of that is all the choices that are made in order to figure out what the distilled version of the story is, which I'm still figuring out. But it's not this sort of like, it's inclusive as a buzzword. It's like, no, it's just, it is inclusive. It's the West. It's like, it was just this big ass open area. Like if you could hold it, you got it, like basically. And so therefore a lot of people from different places showed up here. And what was cool is that almost immediately their identity became what they were remaking themselves into. It was no longer like, I'm from Scandinavia and now I'm here. It's like, no, I'm an American. I'm here. Yeah. Boom. I'm I brought the cows. Like, we're going to have a dairy or, you know, whatever it is. Like, and so like that's what I'm still figuring out how to tell that part of the story a little bit better of just like the everybody aspect of it. Cause it's just been super easy to just, and cool to pull up NC Wyeth and Frederick Remington and you know, a lot of these like classic illustrators and, but it's like, it's all basically, it just drew the same thing, the same, you know, set of guys doing like cowboy stuff. And so like, for me, it's been trying to figure out like, okay, at some point I want to be able to like, not like, I'm not here to tell history lessons. Yeah. Like Jack Hart does a great job, I think, of being entertaining in his account of what he's doing, you know, as a writer. And then also being like, hey, in this day in history, like this terrorist thing happened or Louis L'Amour was born. I thought about doing something like that, but like, I kind of want to live in the realm of the romance, you know, in the story. And so it's more like, okay, how do I just show the story of everybody better eventually? You know, because it's not like I'm feeling like I need to hit the quota for like, in terms of like indigenous people and African Americans and vaqueros. It's just more like, this is boring. It's just boring to tell that story over and over. Like, and I think it's going to be fun to figure that out. Like, cause I got a lot of friends that grew up in Rez's and, I mean, which, like, to say what you want about Taylor Sheridan and Yellowstone, I think one of the coolest things that he's done is he's opened up a conversation about what it's like to be, you know, an indigenous person, you know, and like being on a res, like Wind River. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people talking about the stuff that happens to you know, as far as the trafficking goes and homicides. Yeah. Like, you know, so like when people are like, well, you know, Sheridan, it's like, well, are you out there talking about war party movement? Right. You know, like what, there's so much more to talk about. And so that's the thing that overwhelms me and like, doesn't scare me, but like, that's the thing that's kind of keeping me up now. It's like, okay, I know how to keep this train rolling as it is at the moment. But, it, you know, like I said, it's just, for me, it's already, it's not that it's boring. It's just like, well, how do I evolve this? Sure. How do I get more people involved? And the fact, I didn't think I was going to get a bunch of international people. Yeah, showing that's up cool. And talking. So like, I just don't know what to do with it now, you know, and maybe I don't do anything. Maybe I don't change anything at all for all of this that we're talking about. Like, and I don't think that I would change the intent or the format really. It's more like, how do I do things better? Like even just posting the Sam Elliott animation last night that I did, that's just fun.
That's good.
Like, I don't think everything's got to be like super serious and me telling you about some sad thing that happened to me and here's the lesson in it. But that kind of scares me, honestly, a little bit too sometimes of being like, ooh, like, is this acceptable? Like, who's to say it's not? Like, this is Code of the West. Like, it's an experiment in real time, just like America. That's
awesome, dude. Before we head out, I want to see if you've got, you know, we've talked about all of these different influences across all of these different mediums that helped kind of get you to this point. So do you have like a list or like a handful of somebody's coming in, they're like, I just want to learn about this idea, this time, the history part of it. Like, who would you point people to, if it's authors or even if they're people like just wanting to understand some of the comic book history stuff of like the style, like what are a handful of the things that you would recommend people go read or check out or watch or anything in that regard?
Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. I mean, it's Code of the West is just stoicism, basically. And, I think it's a slightly easier value proposition to be like, hey, you want to learn about cowboys? Then like, hey, do you want to learn about like one of the last emperors of Rome? And his thoughts on society and the world. Like, it's just, the story is a little bit more relatable, I think, to us now. And, so I would say Meditations. And then, you know, people have been asking for recommendations a lot. As far as books go, I've just been telling, as it pertains to Louis L'Amour, especially, I've just been saying Hondo to most people, because most of the people that are finding the page have seen like the John Wayne movies or have seen like the John Ford version that I'm talking about. So to me, like the best sort of overlap then is like read a book by Louis L'Amour that was adapted into a really good John Wayne movie. Like that's a good, I think, starting point for that. You know, and I don't, it's not that I don't want to give my secrets away. It's just, I just don't know if everybody would really be into the esoteric stuff that I'm into, but, you know, I tend to like things that are a bit, divisive is not the right way of saying it, but like, there's a lot of Atlas Shrugged in Code of the West in terms of like how I'm doing it, you know, personally. Sure. Like, I'm not saying like I'm a Randian hero. It's just that like, it's my version of the strike basically. Yeah. It's like, I'm not, I mean, what's interesting is like, there's no, it's a bit of a divergent for a second, but I think this is pertinent to say I'm very pro-American in Code of the West. I'm like I said, I'm it's mostly just like white dudes on cowboy or white cowboys on horses right now, but you know, it is what it is, but like, it's not turned into like, no one's come after me yet. I know that's probably going to happen at some point, but like, I would have thought it would have been like immediate that people would have been like, you know, just wanting to tear it down or deconstruct it. And maybe, I don't know what's going on. It's just, it's like, maybe it's just the intention and the way that I'm talking about it. Cause it's not like I'm going like, fuck you, America's better than everybody. It's like, hey, this is what we're about. This is what we should be about anyways. This is what we used to be about. This is what we talked about being about, even if we failed at it at times. This is what we were striving for. The point of Code of the West, if anything, is like, man, I feel like we just gave up on even on the striving part. Like not only do I agree we have failed at times, we have failed to even try to be better now. And that's what I'm trying to talk about. So maybe that's why people aren't really coming at it, coming in hot most of the time. Cause it's like, when you go on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's like my team versus your team. Right. And Code of the West is like, man, if you're not an asshole, you can be on my team. That's basically what I'm saying. And I think that might be coming across a little bit, because it's like, I mean, there's people getting on the comments on that Paul Harvey video talking about like becoming nationalized citizens and like how like being, you know, becoming a citizen was like the proudest day of their life. And like, that's so fucking cool to me. Like, you know, like at a time when like, okay, immigration is a big, you know, immigration and border is a huge part of the conversation. And like, I feel like the tendency would be to not want to touch any part of that with a 10-foot pole, but I'm like, this is cool. Yeah. Like, no, like I think some people, not some people, I think that maybe there's a simple way to just acknowledge there's complexity to what our world is and what's going on. And that's the manners. That's the courteous aspect of it, I think, where it's just like, oh, well, yeah, like I can't distill all my stuff down into this. That's not, Chris isn't going to be like all just in here, my views and, you know, my philosophy and everything, nor would you. Like, it requires conversations and engagement. And I don't want to just blame, I'm just so tired of everybody being like, well, social media ruined everything. It's like, it connected 7 billion people. Like, you're telling me that like, there's no way to try to use that to help people. Like, that is a bullshit excuse to me. Just absolute complete bullshit. Like, that is just us being lazy and not trying. Or just optimizing to sell shit, which, or to get a following. And I'm not saying everybody needs to be a martyr or selfless. I'm not selfless. I'm being selfish with this. Like, this is giving me purpose. Like, this gives me like something that I'm proud of, and that I'm greedy as hell about that. Like, I want that. I want to feel like I'm serving a purpose. And like, I'm, like I said, I can't do it as a charity like forever. Like, I'm going to have to figure out a way to like survive if it becomes a thing more than it is now. But I think it's complete bullshit to just heap all the responsibility of where we're at right now onto a tool. Sure. It's like blaming a hammer for a bad house.
That's a really good way of putting it. And I think you're doing a great job of connecting a lot of that right now for people.
Trying.
Yeah, I really do.
I'm waiting to fail. Like, I'm waiting for, like, the
But like you said before, if you do, that's, like, what? One of a thousand, right?
Yeah. I'm batting way too good right now. Like, something's going to have to happen. I'm going to get hit in the face with the ball.
I love it, man. Well, dude, thank you for making time to stop by and chat. I had a blast going over all this stuff with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Obviously, we've said it a million times, but Code of the West on Instagram. You've also got the website. Is it website.com? I think it's actually
.us. So it's just the Code of the West.
And you've got merch up there, shirts with all the awesome designs and a bunch of other things. And a bunch of stuff that's going to be coming out soon. So go check out everything that Chris is doing. And dude, thank you again, man. I had a really great time.
No, appreciate you. Thanks for letting me talk to you.
Of course, dude. Anytime.